Hello and welcome back to something. And welcome back to the What the Folks Sunderland Preview Podcast. For once, the international break has been a bit of a welcome thing for Sunderland fans as we look to arrest an alarming run of 7 games without a win. And following that well-earned break, for us at least, we do have 2 chances for the lads to do just that over the Easter break. And first up, of course, is a little trip to Wales as we face Cardiff City. To help me preview a game as a man who hasn't spoken to me in too long of a time, commentator, presenter, reporter, but as I know him, a very good guy in the way of Mark Poyser. Mark, how are you? You well?
Hello. Thank you for having me on again. I think it's my 3rd time. Do I get a hat-trick ball or something like that, like Soccer AM used to do?
I'll send one down, but I don't know if we'll get stolen in the post or something like that. But
no, good to be here. Thanks for having me on again.
I feel bad mentioning this because we hate to talk about Cardiff and Sunderland, right? But let's get on with it. Football did happen. The international break has been good for Sunderland fans. England have had 2 meaningless friendlies. I've had Scotland. Not quite the same for Wales. I was going to avoid it, but you know what? Let's go for it. How are you feeling after that last night?
Yeah, you got to be a little gentle with us in Wales today after what happened last night. Football can be brutal sometimes in the playoffs, as Sunderland fans unfortunately know very well. Yeah, I was there last night at the Cardiff City Stadium. Wales, for 90 minutes, I thought, played really well, created most of the chances. Over the 120 minutes, Poland probably had more of the ball, but didn't have a single shot on target. Danny Ward didn't have a single save to make until penalties, and then it is a lottery. Some of the penalties from both players under that pressure were remarkable. Someone's got to miss. And unfortunately for Wales, it was Dan James. So huge disappointment, obviously, because it would have been history. A third successive Euros, a third successive major tournament for Wales after so long without qualifying. But it is what it is. And ultimately, the damage was done earlier in the campaign in the group stage when they were beaten at home by Armenia. They lost to Turkey. You know, Wales shouldn't have been in the playoffs in the first place. But they played this campaign without Gareth Bale, the greatest Welsh player of all time. So there's a little bit of transition. I say a little bit because they've still got a lot of experienced players in there. You've got a £50 million footballer in Brennan Johnson in there. So they are changing the group to younger players. And whilst it is disappointing, there's still a lot of optimism about in Wales that this is a minor speed bump on the road to hopefully a World Cup in 2 years' time.
Only Niall Huggins was fit. You would have been fine. It would have been all right. Fortunately, he's not. I think looking at Cardiff, you know, we said in the intro that we probably needed the break as fans. I'm guessing the team probably did as well. I think it's probably similar for Cardiff because they lost the South Wales Derby just before the break. I'm assuming it was a game you tuned into. I watched a bit of it. How did Cardiff perform from your perspective? Why did they come out on the wrong side of a defeat against Swansea? Sort of, again, because they lose a lot of those South Wales derbies, don't they?
Yes, unfortunately, they do. They managed to beat them earlier on in the season, which is not the norm. It felt like normal service was resumed. Swansea seemed to understand what that derby means more than Cardiff in recent history. You may remember they did the double over Cardiff in the last 2 seasons, something which before then neither club has ever done. Cardiff caught Swansea earlier in the season in a really bad moment. They had Michael Duff as manager, which really didn't work out, to say the least. And unfortunately, they caught Swansea on a bad day for Cardiff. They were really up for it under a manager who is perhaps more befitting Swansea's mould, their plan, their style of play, however you want to call it, in Luke Williams. But Cardiff haven't been playing particularly well. They've been a bit up and down, despite the fact that, you know, before that defeat, they'd won 4 in a row. I think some of those results were masked by the fact that they played against some quite poor teams. I did the Bristol City game in that run, and Bristol City were absolutely appalling. Cardiff were a little better, but not by much. The Ipswich victory was the real standout performance. That's probably the best they've played since they beat Swansea in September. The winter has been really difficult for Cardiff, and they sort of have come out of it with a little bit more confidence. They've got Aaron Ramsey gently easing his way back in. Callum O'Dowda has been a big loss for them as well. He's just returned, having not played in 6 months. But they're sort of a team that is treading water a little bit. I think everyone got a little bit carried away when they did well at the start of the season and started talking about playoffs. You know, mathematically, they can still do it. I think realistically, we've just got to hope for maybe finishing in the top half of the table. But that's better than last season, because had it not been for Reading and their points deduction, Cardiff would have been relegated. So the bar was set quite low before this season. So it's definitely an improvement. But recent weeks have been a bit Jekyll and Hyde, really. So we're not quite sure what kind of Cardiff team are going to turn up at the weekend.
Interesting you mentioned the game against Ipswich, because I watched it. And in typical Graham fashion, I went, oh, Ipswich this season, they've just got all the luck. Cardiff are never going to score here. And then lo and behold, Cardiff went and scored two goals that, to be honest, they massively deserved. And it was a really good performance. And I think when you get a result like that against a team who, you know, I don't think Ipswich have been lucky, but they've had one of those seasons where they just seem to churn out results no matter what. And Cardiff managed to switch that round and get the two late goals, a really, really, really late winner. Obviously, fans delighted, buzzing with it. And it feels like a kind of statement result when you've got the best part of 8-9 games to have a bit of a run at the playoffs. So how disappointing was it that they followed it up with the performance they did against Swansea? Because it really should have been lift off a little bit after that, shouldn't it?
I don't think it would have mattered even if they'd lost 10 in a row. When you play Swansea, as far as the fans are concerned, you've simply got to get a result, whatever. But yeah, it's exasperated, isn't it, by the fact that they played quite well against Ipswich. There's a really good atmosphere at the stadium, and it was one of their best performances, as I've alluded to already, in a long, long while. And it just didn't happen at Swansea. Swansea seemed to want it more. Errol Bullitt, the manager, said that he felt a few players were hiding in that performance. So you can look at it two ways, really, from a Sunderland point of view, at least. You know, are you going to get a Cardiff team that are still sort of licking their wounds, or will you be getting a Cardiff team that are going to come out and make a response to a really, really big loss as far as the fans are concerned? It doesn't matter where you are on the table. That game really matters to the supporters. And as I've touched on already, Cardiff are very difficult to predict. They're very difficult to judge this season. They play well some weeks. The winter, as I've mentioned, was a real struggle. They play some really difficult matches, difficult performances. You'd like to think, if you're a Cardiff City fan, that there has to be a response. And having got to know Errol Bullitt throughout this season, he certainly won't allow them to just sort of sulk and the season sort of fizzle out. He will want a response. He will want them to play till the end, because we have this uncertainty at Cardiff City. No one really knows what's going to happen at the end of the season. The manager's contract is up as we speak right now. There is no new contract on the table for him. And Cardiff have been through a lot of managers recently. The only person who knows what's going to happen is over in Malaysia, and we never really hear from him.
Kind of forgot he existed with Cardiff, actually. But he does. You can
never forget when you're a Cardiff City fan, though. He's always there.
At least the shirts aren't red, for once. The home shirts, anyway. I think it's funny because you mentioned that run of four games in a row that Cardiff won. And you look at it and I thought, oh, bloody hell, they'd won four games in a row. But it was like 2-1, 1-0 here and there. And I honestly thought, and you've kind of answered this in a way, but I honestly thought, with all due respect to Cardiff fans, Cardiff have won two games in a row at the Stadium Light and been one of the worst teams I've seen, and done smash and grab right at the end. And I thought, I wonder if they're winning 1-0 in that sense, or are they winning 1-0 because they deserve to? Those four games that they won in a row came against teams out of form a little bit, like Ipswich aside. Were those convincing wins? Did the fans feel like they were convincing wins, or were they more just catching teams at the right time?
Well, they certainly enjoyed the Bristol City win. I was, as I say, I did that game, and the celebrations at the end were far more entertaining than the actual game itself. Probably because they've had such a sort of miserable winter, if you like. They haven't had a lot to celebrate. Bristol City are a rival like Swansea. And in those matches against those two clubs, they've won 3 out of 4 this season. That's quite a good return in that sense. I did the Huddersfield game as well, where they won 1-0. Huddersfield were really poor that night. Stoke, their struggles are sort of well documented. Their style of play is quite weird in that they are quite passive. They're not a team to sort of take the game by the scruff of the neck. They tend to sit back a little bit and play on the counter. And I suppose that's fine when you play in Ipswich, when you play in Leeds, when you play in Leicester. But when you play in Huddersfield at home, not sure that cuts the mustard. They found a way to get through on that occasion. And in that Bristol City game, the difference between the two sides was Cardiff had one really good delivery from a corner into the penalty area, which Perry Ng was able to head home, and Bristol City were not able to find that sort of quality. But it's been long overdue that they've edged these results, because they were on the end of some big scorelines throughout the winter. I saw them lose convincingly at Plymouth. They were hammered at Sheffield Wednesday in the FA Cup. They lost convincingly at Hull. And that Plymouth game in particular, that was the last match before the end of the transfer window. And it was one of the most extraordinary post-match interviews I've ever done with any manager. Errol Bullitt essentially, not in so many words, but sort of threatened to leave if they didn't sign any players. And then in the last 2 days of the window, they brought 5 players in. So with Cardiff, there's always a story at Cardiff City. There's always something going on. It's created by the sort of club that Vincent Tan has run for the last 14 years, and decisions at that club don't really follow a lot of logic off the field. I think someone once said to me, I think it was when Steve Morrison was sacked, so we're going back 18 months ago now or so, he brought a lot of players in. They weren't playing amazing football, but they certainly weren't doing badly. And I said to someone, this just doesn't make sense. And they said to me, well, you're applying logic to this decision. And this is Cardiff City. Logic often doesn't apply. And when you look at it that way, they went through 3 managers last season. There's an uncertainty over Errol Bullitt now. And if I was to tell you that Cardiff City have not had the same manager in charge on the opening day of 2 consecutive seasons since Neil Warnock, it tells you that the upheaval that they've had about trying to sort of find their way and find their way back to the Premier League, which at the moment looks, even if you're an incredible optimistic Cardiff City fan, like a very long, long way away.
Michael Beale is available if he does go, yeah. I've heard.
Yeah, speaking of upheaval and daft decisions, from the outside looking in down here, that did seem like a really strange one.
Still does. It's funny with Vincent Tan, because I said before I kind of forgot that he was there, but kind of almost knew he was, if that makes sense. I didn't actually realise that Bullitt's contract was only for a year. How much does not just Bullitt's contract, the whole situation with Vincent Tan, whether it's intentional or not intentional, because you never know with owners these days when you look at the clubs like Sheffield Wednesday, how much does all of that undermine the actual stuff that happens on the pitch, like a manager that doesn't know whether he's going to stay or not, an owner that's in Malaysia doesn't really seem to know what he's doing? How much has the last 14 years been undermined by stuff like that with Cardiff City?
Well, I think we've moved on from the sort of rebrand that was over 10 years ago now with the red shirts. That made him incredibly unpopular, as you can imagine, with a lot of supporters. In the last 3-4 years, basically, I think since the sort of era where Malky Mackay got them to the Premier League and spent a lot of money, Neil Warnock got them to the Premier League and spent a lot of money, and ultimately on both those occasions, they were relegated at the very first attempt. I think he feels like he's had his fingers burnt a little bit, so the sort of size of the investment or the size of the money that's been made available has shrunk a little bit. And things are done maybe a little bit more cheaply than perhaps they were in the past. But it's a real catch-22 with Carter, because a lot of fans believe that until he sells up and leaves, the club will never go on and progress and establish themselves in the Premier League, which is the ultimate goal. But there's no sort of realistic sign of that happening anytime soon. And then you look at the books, you look at the accounts. So they kind of, they can't live with him, but they also can't live without him. They're heavily reliant in a financial sense. The last accounts came out, had the debt that they owed Vincent Tan in the region of 60, 70 million. That actually went down from the previous year because he's converted some of that into shares, some of that into equity. So without Vincent Tan writing the check and making up the shortfall every month, Cardiff City would be in real, real trouble if they even existed at all. So it's really, really difficult to sort of really criticise Vincent Tan, because if he was on this call now, he would say, well, I'm putting the money in every month. So, you know, if that's the case, where are the people who are going to save the club like I have? So there's that going on in the background all the while that they're trying to accomplish things on the pitch, but they're trying to accomplish things with a lot tighter budget. You'll know that they've been under a transfer embargo for the last couple of windows. That obviously ended in January. And part of that mad scramble for signings in January that I was talking about, there was limits put on them by the EFL. I believe that was down to FFP. So everything was done at the last minute, trying to make sure that they were compliant, as all clubs are trying to do now. So yes, it undermines it in a way, but it's a really complicated situation that until someone comes up with the money that he wants for the club, Vincent Tan is going to be staying there indefinitely. And that's, whether you like it or not as a Cardiff fan, that's just a fact, unfortunately.
I suppose you'd also have to get rid of any debt. That's sort of a bit like Ellis Short did with us. And yeah, long story anyway, I'm not a businessman, so I'm probably best not to go into that kind of thing. But I'm interested with Errol Bullitt, because I spoke to a few Cardiff fans earlier in the season, both at the game and via the show, and he seemed to be doing a decent job. But like you mentioned a few interviews you said afterwards, I've seen a few things that kind of sat in 11th. That's not really going downwards, which is good compared to last season. But he hasn't had this amazing season and like ripped them from the doldrums of the championship. But he seems to be doing a decent job. Would Cardiff fans on the whole, and I know you can't speak for everyone, like him to stay? Or is there a kind of feeling that maybe someone else should be in?
I think whether you rate him or not as a manager, I think Cardiff needs some stability in the dugout. They have chopped and changed. There was three managers last season. I think a lot of people perhaps wanted Sabri Lamouchi to stay on last year. It didn't happen for whatever reason. And Errol Bullitt for a while has been openly talking about wanting to stay, wanting to build a project and be in it for the long term. And what you got to remember, I mentioned that embargo, he came in with a squad that would have been relegated, but for another team's financial misdemeanours. He wasn't able to pay a fee for anyone because he was still under that embargo in the summer. Managed to cobble a team together that started quite well, you would say, which made him start to talk about the playoffs. He might have even, I think now with hindsight, he might even admit that he got a little bit carried away back then. So if you are not going to be spending big money in this league, you have to be patient and look at the teams who are all at the top this season. It's all the three teams who've come down, and you would imagine the Sheffield Uniteds and Burnleys and whoever else it will be, they'll be up at the top of the table last season. Unless you've got those parachute payments, it's incredibly difficult to compete. So if you haven't got the money, in my opinion, you've got to build a team over a period of time. So I do think a lot of Cardiff fans would like him to stay. He's very upfront and honest in his interviews. I get on well with him, very well. He's very good to deal with. But he doesn't know. We don't know. Logic would tell you that it would be a smart decision to give him another contract. But the decisions are made by one man and one man only. He has the final say. Whatever anyone else at the club thinks, he has the final say. And he often changes his mind at the very last minute. So we don't know. We don't know. I can't sit here and say with any confidence that Errol Bullitt will still be the Cardiff manager next season, even if it seems like the smart decision, if that makes any sort of sense to you.
Said the word stability there. It's not something I've ever heard of before. I don't know what you meant by that, but here we are.
Doesn't exist in football, certainly in the second tier, does it?
No, definitely not. One of the big stories of the summer was the big rumours of Gareth Bale a few summers ago, and then you hear the rumours about Ramsey, and I'll be honest, I was thinking, surely not. However, he did. He comes in, he's still only 33, he's still captain of Wales, he starts the season relatively well, but he's got his well-documented injury issues, and I thought, I wonder how he's getting on. So, looked at it. 33, but he's appeared in three of the last, I think, 33 games for Cardiff, knee injury and then not in the squad. Obviously, it's not his fault. It's not Cardiff's fault either. But how frustrating has it been for both the player, the club, the manager, that you can't get what is a very, very handy player at this level on the pitch that often? Although he has returned, I believe, in the last game, didn't he?
Yeah, he's made two substitute appearances in the last 6 months, all of which have come in the last couple of weeks. Look, if you're Cardiff and you're under a transfer embargo and you've got the chance to sign Aaron Ramsey, you absolutely bite their hand off, don't you? It's a bit of a no-brainer. And then you accept that there may be these sort of problems along the line where he's got some injury problems. The Championship is a really physical league. You've got to be really durable. He is perhaps not as durable as he once was. However, he clearly has that quality. And if you can only get him on the pitch for a certain percentage of time, he can make all the difference. If he comes in and gets a full pre-season, it may be different next season. We don't know. But certainly, I think you mentioned there Gareth Bale, and there was a lot of rumours. There was a lot of confidence at times that from within the club that that might get over the line. But unlike Aaron Ramsey, Gareth had never had sort of that connection as a youngster with the club. Yes, he was born in Cardiff, but he never played for them. Aaron was brought through the ranks. The club still meant a lot to him. I remember we interviewed him in Caerphilly in the summer. He was opening up a soccer school or something like that at a local school. And this is before his return had been announced, but he didn't dismiss it. And he talked about how much he loved Cardiff and how one day he'd like to come back. And you may remember he came back on loan after he had that really horrific injury at Arsenal. So clearly Cardiff means a lot to him. You would imagine as well he had one eye on Wales and the internationals, because I don't know if you know this, Cardiff and Wales share the same training facility. So he's always nearby to FAW medical staff. That must have been a big factor in his decision as well. So he will want to get fit because he'll want to play another World Cup. He would have wanted to have played at the Euros. Obviously, it's not going to work out that way. But they do have someone in their squad who, if they can get fit, even if it's for, as I say, only a small percentage of the games, how many points can he add to your tally? And the answer is, well, you can't really measure it. But certainly he's got that sort of X factor. And they have badly, badly missed him over the last 6 months. There's no doubt about that. And you only have to look at the way they've tailed off to see that, even if you haven't watched a single minute of Cardiff playing football this season.
Yeah, because I think those first seven or eight games that he played, I think he'd had like four or five goal contributions, and Cardiff.
It's not even what he does on the field. It's what he brings to other people just simply by being there, his presence in the changing room. He's such a big name. He's the fans' biggest hero. He has to give everyone an extra spring in their step.
Yeah, absolutely, especially at this level. I think with Sunderland, I'll be honest, we've probably given up on the playoffs. Unless there's some really positive people listening to this, then fair enough, I salute you. Cardiff are only one place ahead of us, but they're 5 points ahead of us. I think you've got to be very positive to think Cardiff could do it as well. But I did look at the fixtures, and outside of Southampton, you don't actually play anyone from the top six towards the end of the season. Win on Friday, get a good result on Easter Monday. Is there still a bit of confidence that you could get a surprise late playoff spot, or is it just finish high up the table as we possibly can?
Well, Errol Bullitt is no longer talking about the playoffs. Even when they went on four wins in a row, we sort of asked him, is it back on? I think he's learned his lesson a little bit. He just wants to finish the season as strongly as possible, finish as high up as possible, beat last season's points tally, do better than last season. Well, they've already ticked that box already. And if he focuses on that, that's more likely than not to get him a new contract and see where it takes them. Looking at it objectively, I don't think they've got enough to make the playoffs. I think the teams above them, having seen a lot of them this season, teams like Hull, for example, I think big fan of Hull. I think they're really, really good. Coventry are really, really good. Are Cardiff going to get that much more points in the bag over the final 8-9 games than the other teams are? I'd be incredibly doubtful. But stranger things have happened in football. That's why we all follow this game, isn't it? Because you just never, ever know. Sunderland could still make it if they get their act together. Cardiff might still make it. That's the beauty of football. Things happen that you would never, ever think. I talked about logic earlier, didn't I? Football in general sometimes doesn't follow logic, which is what keeps us all going.
Sunderland definitely don't apply logic in weird and wonderful ways, both positive and negative. What would be success for Cardiff? And I know that's a hard thing to manage because every fan base has your most positive and your most negative fan base, and everyone has a different opinion. Everyone's their own person. But what would be classed as a positive season come the end of the year based on what you've had the past few years?
I think it's already a positive season because they've been fighting relegation the last 2 years. Certainly last season was miserable, to say the least. Three managers, they could have had four managers, really. The football and the results at times were pretty horrendous. So this season's already better than last season. And fans accept with the embargo that it's a long-term process. Ultimately, they want to get back to the Premier League. They will feel like a lot of clubs in this league, that a club of their size, Cardiff is a capital city, that they should be in the Premier League. And when they have got up in the last, well, recent years, they've not really given it a proper go. They've really struggled on both occasions. They've never come close to staying up. So it's the same goal as everyone else, really, ultimately, to get back to the Premier League. I think next season, if they have this sort of season, that might not be acceptable, having sort of had this as a base to start from, a full pre-season with the opportunity to spend money, which they didn't have last year with the embargo. Expectations will definitely be higher next year, whoever the manager is. But I think this year, there's an acceptance that this is better than we've had. This will do for now, I think. But certainly there's one eye on the bigger prize in the long term.
There's been a question that I've really enjoyed asking people over the past sort of 18 months, and over the past 7 to 8 weeks, I've hated asking it. What about Sunderland? We felt like a team that has been really good fun to watch from the outside looking in, that has been making real strides, pushing forward, getting in those playoffs last season, buying young players from, you know, abroad and different academies. And it's really felt like there's some fans I've spoken to on this that have gone, yeah, I really like what Sunderland are doing. It's kind of gone a little bit sideways, backwards and downwards over the past few months. Sunderland are never not entertaining in a really depressing way sometimes as a fan. What have you made from the outside looking in of, I suppose, Tony Mowbray being sacked, Beale coming in, Beale going, the Black Cats bar scenario? It's been a bit of a... It's not been great over the past few months. I'm curious as to how it looks from the outside looking in.
Well, I think we mentioned it earlier on, well, very briefly. If you're not a Sunderland regular watcher, you have to look at it through the prism of that managerial change in December, which to everyone who doesn't follow Sunderland week in, week out, look really baffling, to say the least. And you only have to look at the results since then to see that it clearly, with hindsight, was the wrong decision. Absolutely the wrong decision. You tell me, really. Michael Beale has been dismissed. I'm quite surprised he lasted as long as he did, if I'm honest, looking from the outside. Is there going to be a new manager before the end of the season? Are they going to wait till the summer? Are they writing off this season, because I remember seeing Sunderland last year, and Jack Clarke really caught my eye. Sunderland were really good to watch. You had playoff disappointment like Wales did last night. Could have kicked on from there, and it just seems to me, from the outside, that that managerial change has absolutely killed you. And I still can't get my head around that, why that decision was made.
I think the decision to bring in Beer was a very strange one. Obviously, everyone has their own opinion, but yes, about writing the season off. I think if you look at the statement when we appointed Mike Dodds and Beale had gone, the statement said we're going to focus on finishing as high up the table as we can, which to me sounds a bit written off. But obviously, people have different opinions on it and stuff like that. But yeah, it's not been great. You've got the best part of 7 games without a win. Most of them we haven't looked like winning or being close to winning. There's been a couple of tough games in there with Leicester, Southampton away and stuff like that. But yeah, it's not been perfect. And it's weird because it's almost a year ago to the day that we went to Cardiff, won 1-0. I think it was Easter Monday.
Remember doing the game, yeah.
Went on a great run. Now we sit 12th, unlikely to make the playoffs this year. But I had a fan on last week that said, you know, from the outside looking in, don't worry too much. You still look in a relatively healthy position. But I know you can't answer this question really, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What do you think Sunderland could do with in the summer? Because I'm guessing that's when the change is going to happen. What do you think Sunderland appear to be missing from the outside? What kind of manager would you pinpoint as a good appointment? And I know I'm putting you on the spot a bit there, but I'm just wanting you to say Steve Cooper, basically.
Well, we like Steve Cooper in Wales.
We do too, if you're listening, Steve.
No, we like Steve Cooper. He was a very good manager for Swansea. Not all Swansea fans were fully appreciative of his achievements. And I think we've only seen since how good a manager Steve Cooper was. Certainly with the mess they've found themselves in this season. I actually think Steve Cooper would be a incredible Wales manager many years down the line. How realistic that is or not to happen, I'm not quite sure. If I don't know, I don't know if Steve Cooper is a realistic shout or not, but he would be an excellent manager. Before you said that name, and you were talking about what kind of manager would we need, I was thinking, am I allowed to say Tony Mowbray? Because yes. From the outside looking in, I thought he was doing a really good job, really experienced manager, knows the championship. I can't keep going back to it, but it just didn't make any sense. But I do think you need that sort of experienced manager who's been around the block and knows how it's done in this league. To sort of guide you in the right way. And you also mentioned as well, like, has it been a good season? And whoever it was that you spoke to said, well, it's been okay. You look at Sunderland's history of the last couple of years and the documentary years, as I'll call it, if you like. it could and has been worse, hasn't it? A bit like Cardiff City in the last 2 years. It has been worse. So whilst it's not as good as you would have been hoping after last season, it certainly isn't the Chris Coleman years, the League One years and all that. So you rebuild, you go again, but it's going to be this league is so difficult now because the teams that are coming down are so much financially better off than everyone else. So trying to beat them takes a huge amount. And you have to, the stars almost have to align like they did for Luton last year to be able to beat the teams with the spending power. Because it is no surprise to see those three teams right at the top. They've got so much more money than everybody else. Before a ball's even been kicked, they've got a massive head start.
So they've gone their own in it a little bit in many ways, apart from Ipswich gate crashing it a little bit. But then,
well, that'd be really interesting to see how that plays out for the rest of the season. And if either Ipswich don't make it how they do next season, or if one of the three relegated clubs doesn't make it how they do the following season, because someone's got to miss out. And if it's one of the teams that have got the parachute payments, that will be quite interesting whether they need to sell players to make FFP or not, because it's obviously clamping down on everybody. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. The only shame is that the clubs that we're watching aren't involved in the shakeup.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a minute and a half, so I'll ask you as always for the prediction. I'm dead negative recently, but I'll try and be positive, and I'll predict a 1-1 draw. I think it's kind of set up for a draw on Friday, I think.
Is that a positive prediction, a 1-1 draw? is that how bad it's been recently for you?
Maybe realistic.
I thought you'd say 1-0 win then.
No.
I'd base it off Cardiff slowly regaining their confidence, and I'd base it off your recent run. A Cardiff win by a single goal, but I can't see it being convincing the way they've played recently. That'll be my prediction.
Mark, a pleasure as always. I really need to pay for an upgraded Zoom so we can chat for longer. But nonetheless, I have enjoyed our 40 minutes of time. Good to have you on again, mate.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.